Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to JS on Politics, our weekly look at what's on the Wisconsin political scene. We apologize for some technical difficulties that got us off to a late start today, but we still have a full show. What a difference a week makes as Janesville's Paul Ryan is poised to be the next House Speaker. We'll talk about that and look at his record on PolitiFact's Truth-O-Meter. It was a busy week in Madison with changes coming to campaign contributions, the Government Accountability Board, and John Doe investigations. We'll look at what it all means. We'll kick around those issues and presidential politics with editorial page columnists James Causey and Christian Schneider. And, of course, we'll take some viewer questions at the end. But we're going to begin with Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to give us the latest from the nation's capital on Paul Ryan. So, Craig, when we talked a week ago, Paul Ryan was kind of reluctant to get into this role. Now he's less reluctant, but he's getting into it on some of his own terms. Tell us about what's happening in Washington today.
So Paul Ryan is obviously trying to do this on his own terms, which is kind of what's interesting about his candidacy for Speaker. And one of his conditions has been the support of three major factions among House Republicans. The moderate faction endorsed him today by acclamation. We're still waiting to hear from sort of the biggest of the three groups, which is a very mainstream Republican group. But the key group was last night, was the House Freedom Caucus. This is the group that really forced John Boehner out of the speakership. And they gave him what they called a supermajority of their membership. There's 40 members. It fell short of the 80% that would constitute an official endorsement, but it was good enough for Paul Ryan, removing the major political obstacle to him becoming Speaker, which is likely to happen next week.
All right, so talk a little bit about that vote last night and, you know, some of the conditions that there's still people within that Freedom Caucus who are balking at some of the things that Paul Ryan put out there as conditions for his speakership. Is that going to be a problem for him, do you think?
You know, it remains to be seen. I mean, there are a few people in the Freedom Caucus that don't like Paul Ryan for other reasons. I mean, some of them are hung up on his kind of relatively moderate position on immigration. But one of the big issues was this parliamentary tool called the motion to vacate the chair, which traditionally gives an individual member of the House at any time the option to really force a vote to remove the speaker. And it's been described as kind of a sword hanging over the head of speakers. It was hanging over the head of John Boehner, the current speaker, and Paul Ryan didn't want it hanging over his head. So they, members of the Freedom Caucus, were very leery when they thought that Paul Ryan was proposing to do away with this parliamentary tactic, but he assured them that he just wants to modify it. So there's some details that remain to be worked out, but right now both sides are willing to kind of give each other enough credit to move ahead with this project.
All right, so as we know, Paul Ryan had talked about wanting to spend more time with his family, that maybe he won't do as much, you know, national traveling and fundraising. But talk a little bit about the temperament he brings to this role. I mean, what kind of speaker do you think Paul Ryan will be, and can he bridge some of these chasms that have been, you know, bedeviling the party?
Well, he combines a very, very conservative kind of policy point of view and ideology, particularly on fiscal matters, with, you know, a relatively pragmatic streak when it comes to, you know, working out differences within his caucus and even on sometimes working with Democrats. He's been voting generally to avoid some of these, you know, high-level collisions in Washington, fiscal cliff, debt ceiling, government shutdowns. So that in that sense, he does kind of bridge some gaps within the party. He would be, I think, arguably the most conservative speaker we've had in our lifetimes based on his voting record, but he's a kind of an institutionalist, so in that sense, moderates were happy with him. We're a big cheering group of his, despite his conservatism.
All right. So this position will put him third in line for the presidency, so very high ranking. But does it end his hopes of ever being president? You never see the House Speaker, it seems, move on to other things. What happens is they lose support eventually, and and then just step down.
Yeah, so one way that could happen would be if his speakership ended badly, which is certainly a possibility. I mean, this is a very, very difficult caucus to govern, particularly when we have divided government. It would be much easier for him if Republicans elect a president in 2016. But traditionally, it's been up or out for speakers. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is the only one of the last eight speakers who didn't leave the House after her speakership ended. And there's been some talk that this could be Paul Ryan's last job in politics.
All right. Well, we'll leave our discussion there for today. And we're going to go right now to a tape segment with looking at Paul Ryan's record on the Truth-O-Meter. Thanks, Craig. With Paul Ryan about to ascend to the speakership of the House, by all indications, we thought we would take a quick look at his record on PolitiFact's Truth-O-Meter. We're joined now by Tom Kircher, one of our PolitiFact writers. And Tom, we're going to roll through some of these recent claims. Mm-hmm. The first one is from blogger Eric Erickson, who was not a fan of Ryan as House Speaker. And he says, Paul Ryan is one of less than three dozen Republican congressmen to have voted for every bailout to come before Congress. And we rated that mostly false.
Bye. Right. There were three major bailouts, so we looked at Paul Ryan voted for two of them, but voted against another one. He voted for the bailout of the banks, known as TARP, and he voted for the auto industry bailout. But he voted against bailing out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the enterprises that are set up to help with home loans.
Okay. All right, and let's look at some now from Paul Ryan himself that we've done over the past months. And this is Paul Ryan, who says, Medicare is, quote, going broke. The trust fund goes bankrupt in 2026. That's one of his big issues. We rated it mostly false.
A couple problems with this one. There was an estimate that part of Medicare, not all of Medicare, Part A, which primarily pays hospitals, that trust fund would run out of money by 2026. But that doesn't mean it would stop operating or be bankrupt. There would still be funds flowing in. And if Congress didn't make any changes, Part A of Medicare might have to be scaled back, but it wouldn't be bankrupt.
All right. And this is another issue that Paul Ryan has taken up. He says, over the past 3 years, deep poverty has reached its highest level on record, and we rated that true.
Deep poverty is a measure of very poor people, so Americans with an income of less than half of the federal poverty level. And we found he was accurate in the three most recent years that have been measured. That percentage of very low-income Americans has been the highest on record.
Okay. All right, we have another one from Paul Ryan. He says, 20% of single adults ages 21 to 25 with no kids are not working or even in school trying to find a job, and we rated that one false.
And in this case, Paul Ryan actually admitted he was misquoting a statistic. There was a federal number relating to younger Americans not working or not in college, but there's not a federal statistic for the group he cited, which was younger Americans without kids and single.
All right, and lastly, Paul Ryan said recently, Miller Brewing is not a U.S. company anymore, neither is Anheuser-Busch. It could even be one company soon, but our rating was true. So,
yeah, there was a discussion about taxation and whether companies in America moving headquarters overseas to get lower taxes. And in that context, Paul Ryan mentioned that the parent companies of Miller and Budweiser are no longer here. Parent company of Miller is in England, parent company of Budweiser in Belgium.
All right, so we have Scott Walker's star kind of descending on the national level, Paul Ryan's ascending, and the truth meter rolls on. So thanks, Tom. We'll be back in the future.
You bet.
All right, let's turn now to some state government issues. It's been a busy week in Madison, and our panel right now is Mary Spicuzza, one of our political reporters, Dan Weiss, our watchdog columnist, and we have Patrick Marley in Madison. And Patrick, we'll start with you. One of the big issues this week was changes to the John Doe laws and what can be investigated and significantly what can't be investigated. Can you give us a sense of what has passed and where it all stands as we move forward on that issue?
Sure, the John Doe investigations are used for a lot of political crimes as well as drug crimes and things like that. They allow prosecutors to compel people to testify or turn over documents. They're usually conducted in secret. The John Doe investigation of Walker's campaign and conservative allies has upset Republicans quite a bit. They put these restrictions in place to remove all political crimes and some other crimes from the John Doe law. So any investigation in the future of politicians would have to, for political activities, would have to be done using traditional investigations or grand juries, which are essentially nobody uses or hasn't used for years in Wisconsin.
All right, well, let's talk about the fallout there. We've noted in past you know, shows and things. We do a lot of John Does around here. So is this put the end to the John Does as we know them, or where does this go?
What's different is that Milwaukee started doing John Does about election fraud, campaign corruption, that sort of stuff. And they did it for a number of years, focusing primarily on second and third tier Democrats. They did Tony Clark, Johnny Thomas, Michael McGee, and no one complained. One reason is they ended up charging each of those three, and there was no backlash. But this is a classic case of if you're going after the king, you better slay him. And when they go after Scott Walker and they don't charge him, they make the decision not to, this is the backlash that comes.
Right, yeah. Well, they didn't – in the second Doe, it's not that they decided not to charge anybody. Their investigation wasn't – and shut down by the courts before they completed their work.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just evidence of all the politics and things that were going on and the maneuvering. I mean, Mary, do you see any – for the Republicans, they're going to get this through, but is it a political win for them, or do people – not care? How are the voters going to see something like this?
You know, I think a lot of Democrats are saying that they're overreaching. The same thing happened when Democrats were in power of the governor's office and both houses of the legislature. And I think the Democrats are saying you should be focused on jobs. You shouldn't be dismantling the government ethics agency. So we'll have to see what voters think in the next big election. But I do think that there are concerns that Wisconsin has a lot of problems, and maybe the GAB isn't the top one.
But one point that I haven't seen raised anywhere is the question about secrecy. That's some of the concerns about the John Doe process this time was that some stuff leaked out while the investigation was going on. But this is an odd fix to take care of that, because under the John Doe, people are compelled to remain silent. But if political corruption investigations become just traditional investigations, the likelihood that leaks will occur will be much greater. People involved in the process can talk and tell people what they've been asked about, what they've said in court, and so forth.
Yeah. But then the prosecutors still couldn't talk, so it would be this kind of lopsided openness where targets could talk and prosecutors couldn't really defend themselves.
But that happens with grand juries as it is. So the people who testify before a grand jury can say whatever they want to say afterward.
All right, let me ask Patrick on another topic this week that was moving through the legislature, which was some changes to campaign finance. This had the Democrats kind of up in arms and out of the chamber, I believe. So talk about what happened on that measure.
Sure. So this is a top-to-bottom rewrite of our campaign finance laws. They really haven't been updated since the 1970s. A number of federal and state court decisions have struck down parts of Wisconsin's law. It's in grave need of a rewrite. Democrats don't like the way that the Republicans have done it. It keeps in place many of those court rulings, codifies them. It also allows some new things to happen. For instance, corporations could give to political parties and legislative committees that are controlled by legislative leaders. Democrats said this went too far, and they refused to vote on it, saying that they thought that all lawmakers were ethically compromised on the bill, and so they just simply didn't cast votes.
So we couldn't have had nobody voting on it. There would have been nothing there. But what did you guys make of the tactics?
Of the tactics, it was interesting. It draws some attention to it, and maybe gets a little bit more press. I mean, the impact will be interesting, though, of this legislation, where, one, there's also the coordination element that's involved, that they can coordinate more closely with these outside groups, which is what started the John Doe investigation in the beginning. And you're going to see, I'm guessing, more money in the system, and more money that we don't know where it's coming from, because groups can give money to the parties and so forth, and then they can shift whatever money they want to give to the particular candidates.
All right, well, let's mention the last thing, and Mary mentioned it a little bit before, the government accountability reforms are also moving forward. I guess I want to ask this question of our panel of, you know, independently, the voters might not care about too much about individual measures here, but collectively, does it give the impression to them that, you know, the Republicans with them in power are sort of putting their finger on the scale or giving themselves an advantage on these various fronts?
Well, this is a back to the future type of thing, where we're going back to the way it used to be in 2007. The thing that is interesting is the concern before was that it didn't do anything, that the elections board and ethics board did nothing because it was too political. And now the concern is that it's doing too much and that it's biased in what it's doing. And when the Democrats get control, I wonder what the Republicans are going to say about how they run things when they're in charge.
Yeah. What's your take, Mary?
Yeah, I think, again, the overreaching issue has come up with the GAB. It's come up with the John Does of now that Republicans control everything, they're pretty comfortable with the, what they're doing. But again, when they're not in power, they're probably going to be kicking themselves, kind of like Democrats are probably kicking themselves that they didn't do redistricting reform when they had the chance.
Patrick, last one is, do you get a sense of that calculus as you talk to people in Madison that it's, you know, this is the chance? You've got the majority, so is your chance to do these things that you've waited on? You know, whatever the consequences. The
Republicans feel strongly that they think the system is working against them right now. They say they want a fair system, not one that's tilted toward them. Obviously, the Democrats are using this to create this narrative that with the campaign finance changes, John Doe changes, and the government accountability board changes, that they're just fixing the system for them. We'll see what voters think. I mean, I do think that one issue they have to be mindful of is with these new commissions, they'd be split evenly between three Democrats and three Republicans. You have the potential for gridlock. The Federal Election Commission is set up that way. They can't get anything done. I mean, one person was saying the other day they can't even agree on what to order for lunch. And that's a situation where just absolutely nothing gets done. No investigations happen. Issues like how to implement different aspects of election law, like how close election observers can be to poll workers. If you have a 3-3 split, well, you're really giving no answer to municipal clerks around the state.
And back when it was Elections Board, Ethics Board, the Elections Board was basically a collection of hacks and lobbyists. You would come in and, you know, it would be the toadies for both parties coming in and trying to figure things out. I remember covering the Elections Board when Mark Sostrich, who later went to prison, ran the Elections Board, calling all the shots. So, you know, this is what happened in the past when it was divided up and made very political.
All right. Well, we've used our one allotted Back to the Future reference this week, so we're going to leave our discussion there on state government and turn to this video, which will set the stage for our last segment. And this is Joe Biden this week going back to the past, because he's marking the end of his political career, I guess, is when the term is over, because he's not running for president next year.
So I think we'll roll two references take. Now.
Okay, sorry.
As my family and I have worked through the grieving process, I've said all along what I've said time and again to others, that it may very well be that that process, by the time we get through it, closes the window on mounting a realistic campaign for president, that it might close. I've concluded it has closed. I know from previous experience that there is no timetable for this process. The process doesn't respect or much care about things like filing deadlines or debates and primaries and caucuses. But I also know that I couldn't do this if the family wasn't ready. The good news is the family has reached that point. But as I've said many times, my family has suffered loss, and I hope there would come a time, and I've said this to many other families, that sooner rather than later, when you think of your loved one, it brings a smile to your lips before it brings a tear to your eyes. Well, that's where the Bidens are today, thank God. Bo is our inspiration. Unfortunately, I believe we're out of time, the time necessary to mount a winning campaign for the nomination. But while I will not be a candidate, I will not be silent. I intend to speak out clearly and forcefully to influence as much as I can where we stand as a party and where we need to go as a nation.
All right, we're back now with our new panel to discuss the presidential election and other things. We have James Causey, editorial page columnist, and Christian Schneider is joining us from Madison. I was told earlier that I used a Back to the Future reference in saying no Back to the Future references, so hereby no more Back to the Future references. But Joe Biden, what's your sense, James? He didn't run, just was that inevitable, or what was, you know, with his announcement?
Well, it was getting so late. He made the right decision. I'm still not quite sold on Hillary, though. It would have been nice if he would have got in, but he should have did it like months ago. I mean, he waited to the very end, and, you know, what he didn't have a choice. He had to step out.
Yeah. Well, Christian, what do you think? I mean, this wasn't a normal situation that he had the death of his son. He's wrestling with these things, and then he's sort of Joe Biden who wrestles and thinks these things through. Did he just miss his window here, as he said, or what? Or did he really want to run? Did he have the fire in the belly for it at all?
Yeah, I mean, to use a football reference, you know, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in town. And with people looking at, you know, what's going on with Hillary right now, they thought maybe he could be kind of an insurance policy against her candidacy, which is funny. I mean, just a couple of years ago, he was kind of a laughing stock, and everybody's, you know, even Democrats would make jokes about him. And now he was suddenly seen as the savior to the party. But yeah, it was too late for him. And, you know, recently he's even said things like he said, abortion is always wrong and things like that. So I don't necessarily know that he was in step with the party as it stands right now. I mean, you've got a socialist, you know, running not too far behind Hillary. So yeah, I don't think he really matches the mood of where Democrats are right now.
All right, so the Democrat we just mentioned, Hillary Clinton, is before Congress today for another hearing on Benghazi. James, is this how does the public feel about this sort of thing? The many hearings we've had on that issue.
It's almost getting to sound like a broken record. I think we're getting tired of hearing about the emails, and we're getting tired about hearing about Benghazi. I don't know how much longer this could go on. I really want to move past this. You know, don't get me wrong, I understand people lost their lives, but how often or how many times do you have to smash her over the head before we're tired of it? We want to move forward.
All right, Christian, is there anything new do you think we'll learn from the testimony today, or has it all been kind of said and we're just, you know, going through our paces at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some documents that have been revealed during the hearings, just what I've seen this morning. But, you know, Democrats will obviously say, you know, this is a little news, this isn't anything new. But, you know, when you look at the polls, people do still think that she's not really given us the whole truth on Benghazi. So I don't know how long the hearings are going to go, but, you know, we may still learn something. Who knows?
All right, some local news and things going on this week. Earlier in the show, we talked about the vote on the campaign finance, the Democrats who left the building, or at least left the room. Christian, what was your sense about what they were up to there?
Yeah, so they had the bill, the campaign finance bill, last night that essentially, you know, codified a lot of the court rulings. And you had Democrats who, you know, decided to recuse themselves and not even vote. I mean, they're called representatives for a reason, because it's their job to represent their constituents. And yet instead they decided to go with this kind of cynical press ploy to win a few press points. So, I mean, it was all gimmicky. You know, legislatures take tough votes all the time, but they stand up there, they debate, they take their vote, and they go out and explain it. So for them to just run off the floor like that, it just doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't look good for them, I don't think.
What did you think, James? Good tactic, bad tactic, winner or loser of a approach?
I'm on Christian's side on this. I don't think it was a good tactic. I think you have to, you're there to represent the people, and I don't know if that was the best way to do that.
All right, you had a column this week, James, in the wake of the issue with John Henson, the Milwaukee Buck, at a jewelry store in Whitefish Bay, and the racial profiling that went on there. What do you think that says about our community these days, that these things are still happening and in such prominent places?
Oh, it says we still have a long ways to go. I mean, the fact that this happened to a $44 million man, take the money aspect out of it, it happens to a lot of African Americans and Hispanics as well. I mean, I talked about in my column how often I'm racially profiled, and how many times I'm stopped by the police officer, by police, for a variety of reasons, and I'm never given a ticket. So it makes you just wonder, you know, people say, you know, this is blown out of proportion, but just think about what they did. He shows up at the jewelry store. They lock the door, go to the back, and when the police show up and they say, oh, hey, he's fine, knock on the door and say, hey, this is John Henson, he's a cool guy. Oh, Mr. Officer, can you please stay? Because I don't know, he may have a moment and he may lose his mind or something. And the cops did the right thing by saying, no, we're leaving. I mean, the apology was given, but it still feels funny and sits bad in my stomach.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually think we're doing the store a favor by calling it racial profiling. I mean, because this is, I think, you know, this is like 60s era Alabama type of stuff right here. where they lock the door and they won't even let him in the store. I mean, it's ridiculous. And fortunately, he's got $44 million now to spend at jewelry stores, you know, all throughout the city. I think that some jewelry stores are going to be happy that he's out on the town now.
All right. Let's turn now to some viewer questions to end the show here, and I'm going to start with this one for Christian. This is from Fed Up, who says, so what good is it for Republicans to have power if they cave and put Paul Ryan in as Speaker? He's not a true conservative. What's your take on Paul Ryan and how he's going to handle things in Washington?
Bless your heart. Like, I love these people who think that somehow Paul Ryan's not conservative enough to be Speaker of the House. Just a few years ago, Democrats were running ads with Paul Ryan, you know, pushing grandmothers off cliffs. And now suddenly we've gotten to the point where he's somehow too liberal to be House Speaker. I mean, there would be no Tea Party without the changes to Social Security and Medicare and the types of things that Paul Ryan proposed just a few years ago. And now the Tea Partiers have somehow turned on him. But I told him because of those people that he probably shouldn't do it. It looks like now that he probably will. We'll be better off for it, but I don't know if it's going to be worth it to him.
All right, let me ask this last question to James, and this was from Milwaukee Gal, who says, Chris Abele has an opponent, Barrett has two. Who is more likely to lose next year?
I think he could be mayor for life, so I think the person most in trouble is Chris Abele.
Christian, what do you think? Is either one in trouble, and if so, who would you say has more of a formidable challenge?
Yeah, I mean, Abele has more of a formidable opponent, but I still don't see him losing. But I guess if somebody had more of a chance, I would probably go with Abele.
All right, so we'll leave it there. We'll be back next week at our regular time, and we thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.